Interviewing Marion Jennings, January 14, 1983. Okay, Mrs. Jennings, you were born here in Bridgeport, correct?
Yes, I was born in Bridgeport. I lived here all of my life.
What part of Bridgeport were you born in?
I lived in the east side on Beardsley Street. At that time, Beardsley Street was a wonderful street. The people owned their homes. We were very good friends, and people took very good care of their homes. The front yard was always neat. And I went to Newfield School as a child, which was as far as the fourth grade, I think. Then I went to Lincoln School, which, you know, was burnt down. Mm-hmm. It was a very nice school. I was treated very well in that school. Many of my friends did not go on to high school. It was during the war when I graduated from, just before the World War I when I graduated from Lincoln School. And I went to Central High School in 1916. Central High School was a brand new school then, so I had the privilege of being one of the first classes in that school. I started out taking a college course, but then my mother did not want me to go away. I was an only child. She didn't want me to go away to college, so I changed to the normal school, normal course. Mm-hmm. Now, at that time, there was a two-year normal school in Bridgeport. I graduated. And as I said before, not many blacks went to high school. I guess when I went in 1916, there were just about four or five blacks, because it was the beginning of the war. And there were a lot of jobs, because Bridgeport was a factory town, mm-hmm. a munitions. And they just didn't go, and many of my dear friends just didn't go to school. Mm-hmm. And when I graduated, my high school, years were uneventful as far as prejudice is concerned. I had a wonderful parents, mm-hmm. my mother and father. My father came from North Carolina, my mother came from Virginia. And they taught me to have pride in myself. So I never felt inferior to anyone.
Was the neighborhood that you grew up in an integrated neighborhood?
Well, yes, there were white and black mm-hmm. living there. And we were friendly. But as I look back, you know, I wonder why there were just so few blacks in high school. Mm-hmm. And I was always one black in my class. I don't remember any very much prejudice of people that teachers liked mm-hmm. me. And I got along very well. So then, of course, at this time, there were no black policemen. There were two black postmen and no black firemen. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have any images to go by, except my parents, who my father was not an educated man. But he read the Times every Sunday, and he called himself sort of a politician, and he was a Republican. So, he took an active part in the community. Mm-hmm. He worked in the Locomobile Company of America. Now, that was an automobile which was built in Bridgeport. Mm-hmm. And it was built down the end of Bain Street at Seaside, near Seaside Park. And he was a foreman there of people who took care of the factory. And when the war started, he had a little restaurant there, mm-hmm. right on the boardwalk, right on the Long Island Sound mm-hmm. there. And the people from the factory came in to have lunch, 35-cent lunch. And then he had another room for the officers of the factory. Mm-hmm. They came in. And the people in the factory worked in our lunchroom. And then people from the city worked in our lunchroom. Mm-hmm. So that that was providing work. Mm-hmm. And I was in high school. So I would go down there every day for my lunch. And when the war started, they were making trucks for the army. Mm-hmm. And I had a pass, and I walked down and in the battery and had my lunch. And that was quite an experience. Mm-hmm. So as I said before, I graduated from high school, and I went to normal school. I was a very protected child, not having any brothers or sisters. I was, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So when it came time for me to go to normal school, is this what you want to say?
Yes.
When it came time to go to normal school, and I said the black children hadn't gone to school,
mm-hmm.
and some of my father's friends, my father had a very dear friend who was sort of a leader of the city at that time, and he worked in the bank. He was sort of a messenger. So he called my father and he said, Norwood, do not let Marion go to normal school because they're not going to let her in. So I had my mother was a wonderful woman, and there was no one going to stop me from going to normal school. So very reluctantly, I went to normal school, and no one kept me out. But the first month, I was failed two or three subjects, and I was heartbroken. So I went to the dean and was out talking to my parents about it, and I said, well, I'm going to leave. And he said, Marion, don't ever come to me again. You're not going to leave. Go and take the exams and make up exams and pass them and then go on, and, mm-hmm. Which I did. And then I had trouble. We had critics. Now the critics, we would practice teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came time for me to have a critic, no one, not any of the teachers wanted me to be a critic. But my father was working with the father of one of the critics. And he said to my father, Norwood, you have a daughter who's in normal school? And he said, yes. He said, well, my daughter is a critic, and no one wants to take her. But I told my daughter she had to take it.
Good.
So and she was wonderful to me. And so then I didn't have any more trouble mm-hmm. in normal school.
So you were the only black student there?
I was the only black student there. Before, as there had been, I have another friend who passed away. She was the first black student to go to normal school. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember her name?
Her name is Mercer Whiting Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
She was a very smart girl. She became a teacher. She had a little trouble getting her job, but she had, I think, a very dear friend, or the NAACP helped her, and she taught for a very, very short time, because she married
mm-hmm.
and had a family. And so she didn't teach long, but she, Mercer Whiting Hamilton, was the first teacher, black teacher in Bridgeport. So I graduated from normal school. And just before I graduated from normal school, one of the teachers, who was just terrible, I would sit on the bus with her, and she'd be facing me and she wouldn't speak to me. And then I'd have to go in her class. So she was one of the teachers who failed me. So she said to me one day, she said, Mrs. Williams, will you come in to my office? And I went to the office, and she said, now you're going to be appointed. And I had always been very polite and kind to them, and I said, thank you, Mrs. Kelsey. And I walked out saying to myself, I'll never speak to you again. So then when September came, and it was time for me to be appointed, my father's friends were trying to help me, you know. They said, well, because Mary has to get a job. So I was appointed with the help of my father, who had political friends. They had a meeting at the bank on Stratford Avenue, the Board of Education meeting, and my mother made my father go up there at 12 o'clock at night to see how the meeting, you know, mm-hmm. what had happened. And sure enough, I was appointed.
And where was your first school?
And my first school was Hallen School. Now, when I was in normal school, we had a phys ed teacher who would tell us about this school. He said that there's a school up in the North End, and it's a portable school, and they don't have any plumbing. And we laughed. Well, I was the last one appointed, because in my class, there were 60 pupils, and 30 were appointed.
Mm-hmm.
And my rating warranted me to be among the 30.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I went up to this Hallin School and saw these two portable buildings and this outdoor plumbing, I almost fainted. But I taught in that school for 43 years, and the pupils were all ethnic groups, like Italian, Hungarian. There were no blacks. And I taught in that school for 43 years.
Did you have any problems with the parents?
Never had a problem with a parent as far as my color. Never was a principal. I got along very well. A few weeks ago, they gave a party, and they had five of the older teachers, and I was one of them. So, and they have a Catholic church called Our Lady of the Good Counsel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we, it's on the reservoir, off of Reservoir mm-hmm. Avenue. When we first went there, they had no church, no buses. Just these people, and these were foreign people,
mm-hmm.
and the teacher could do no wrong. And if you taught their children, they were so proud of having education. Teacher could do no wrong. And I have so many friends. These children, I see them, they're old people now, and they remember me because of my color.
Right.
But I don't remember them, but they're so glad to see me, you know. And I just, every day I see them, every time I see them, I say, well, I must have done something wrong because they don't have to speak to me. But I never had any trouble mm-hmm. at all. And I was just saying, they had this party, and I was supposed to meet a girl outside of Lady of Good Counsel. But she had gone in. And when I went in, there were about 150 people in there, and they stood up, and they all started toward me. They were old men, 65 mm-hmm. years
these
old.
These are your students.
And these were my students. Yes. But I then finally, very unfortunately, the neighborhood was a beautiful neighborhood. And they built this project, and that spoiled the neighborhood. And then I've had some very nice black children
mm-hmm.
who came to our school afterwards. But at first they were, for probably the first 10 years, there were no blacks mm-hmm. in that school.
Just to go back a little bit, what church did you attend when you were a child?
I went to Walters Memorial Church. That's on Broad Street.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone to that church all my life. And I went to Sunday school. I taught in Sunday school. Mm-hmm. I played the piano for Sunday school.
Were there any other social groups that came from the church that helped the black families in Bridgeport at that time?
Well, you know, we were like a family. We were like a family on the street.
Mm-hmm.
We all lived in rather nice houses, you know. I don't remember. And then our church was a family.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you're supposed to remember this is 1918 and 20. And before the war, there were about 3,000 blacks in Bridgeport. But then when the war started, people came from all over, from the South.
Mm-hmm.
And they had plenty of work. So there were. We didn't know anything about people who didn't have, mm-hmm. you know.
When did your parents come to Bridgeport?
My father came in 1898. My father was, as I said many times, he's a very energetic man. He worked, there was a boat, the Nutmeg State, used to come up from New York to Bridgeport. They'd bring passengers in the morning and the evening.
Mm-hmm.
There was a black man by the name of Mr. John Stevens, who was probably the most outstanding black man of the community at that time. He lived on Stratford Avenue. He had two sons, and they were both in the police post office.
Mm-hmm.
They worked in the post office. They were the first black people who had a very, very good jobs. They worked in the post office, and Mr. Stevens, the father, was the steward, the head of this boat, like the food mm-hmm. and the hiring of people. And he was a very outstanding man. And my father worked on that boat when he first came in 1898. And my father and mother were living in New Jersey. So my mother was on the trolley car one day in New York, and she saw where the nutmeg state had burned. And my father was one of the people who helped save the people on the boat, and he couldn't swim. He could have been very rich because the insurance company wanted him to go on their side, mm-hmm. but he didn't. He was a very honest man. And so after the boat burned, now that was my father, would tell me about that all my life. My father really inspired me in many ways because he'd always tell me about the burning of the nutmeg state. And then we had a big red encyclopedia, and he would, you know, read that and tell me about the presidents of the United States. I had a very unusual father. So we gave affairs in our church, and in the street we lived, there were deacons from the Baptist church, mm-hmm. and I just adored them. And sometimes they took me to the Baptist church, which had more people. It was a larger church. But as far as if there were people who were in need, my mother always helped people who were in need. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't any, you know, big thing about it.
Right.
She did it quietly. Mm-hmm. And a very big influence in Bridgeport was the YWCA. We had a wonderful YWCA here. It was called the Phyllis Wheatley YWCA.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And it was on Beach Street. Mm-hmm. And that was the gathering place for people, for children. And in the YWCA, black people, women, learned how to be presidents at meetings, you know. Mm-hmm. They learned how to have a great deal. And I, in high school, was a leader. I taught the children crafts. Mm-hmm. We went there in the afternoon. And that was about the only place that we had to go mm-hmm. of our own.
This was strictly for black young people?
It was a branch of the YWCA. Mm-hmm. We had a black branch and a white branch. Mm-hmm. And we took part in each of them. But blacks went to the Phyllis Wheatley. And then we were on the board. They had a board of directors. Mm-hmm. And there were black women on that board of directors. And then the executive director from the YWCA always came over, and we took part. It was a very nice thing. But finally, we had a director in the YWCA when they said, well, you can't have a separate YWCA. Mm-hmm. They were going to build this new YWCA, which is on Golden Hill.
Right.
And so, very reluctantly, and it upset the people, it broke the people up in Bridgeport when they had to give up the YWCA, because it was ours. We had our dances there, mm-hmm. and the children had their parties there. It was, and then when the YWCA, when the new YWCA was built, and when they did away with Phyllis Wheatley, the black people wouldn't go. Very few black people would participate. Mm-hmm. I continued, and Mrs. Gardner, and a few other people, we were on that board. We became members of that board, but it was sort of a fiasco. They just did not like the idea of going together.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just until recently that black women became interested in the YWCA in Bridgeport, and they're on the board. I always liked the Y,
mm-hmm.
and I was very sorry when the feeling became so strong. But it was just the way it was. The times coming.
Times. Mm-hmm. When did you and your husband meet?
Well, I tell you, I taught in Bridgeport. Until. But I graduated from normal school. I didn't have a degree, so we had to. The teachers had to go take courses, you know, to get a degree, and so I always, when I was teaching, I was always taking courses.
Where did you go for those?
Well, I took went to New York University, mm-hmm. Columbia, and then I went in. We had New Haven Teachers College, right. And I went up there, and we used to have our meetings at Yale. Then that trip became Southern,
mm-hmm.
and so I didn't get married until I was 38 years old, and I was going to Columbia. And I met my husband in Columbia when he was working in New York, but I met him. He was a chemist. He retired now,
mm-hmm.
and he worked in New York, so that's when I met him.
Oh, that's nice. Do you remember any of the dating practices when you were a teenager?
Well, no, because I was the loud stage. My mother was very strict. Dating, well, of course, if I wanted to go to a dance, very seldom did I go with a boy. My father would take me and then come and get me. I was very sheltered. I think I must have been crazy when I look at these teenagers now. But I had boyfriends, but I was very sheltered.
Mm-hmm.
And the boys that I went out with, my mother sort of checked out. But my friends went to parties, mm-hmm. and but we just went to a dance, and our parents were there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But my parents were there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I didn't have many dates per se. I went to church things, and when I got older, I went with. To mm-hmm. dances, but we didn't have any cars, remember?
Right.
We had to go on the trolley car or the bus, and we had house parties.
Mm-hmm. How extensive was the trolley car system?
Very. We had, when I was a child, we had a trolley car. We went up to, they had a pleasure place called Savin Rock, and we'd go up to Savin Rock in a trolley car. We went to picnics on trolleys.
Mm-hmm.
Our whole life was trolleys. My parents did not have a car. I had a car in 1929, after I had taught a few years. Mm-hmm. I had a car of my own. I bought a car, but my parents never had a car. And then we had jitneys. These were like buses,
mm-hmm.
and private cars after the trolley car went out of existence.
Mm-hmm. Now, World War One. Started when you were in high school.
When I was in high school.
And you mentioned that when the war started, more black families came into the city.
Yes.
How did this change your family? How did the war change your family?
Well, the war didn't, because my father had this restaurant, and we had these people working for us, and my mother went to work. Down there at the restaurant and helped in there. But before that, my mother, Bridgeport was a lovely place, Main Street. Every time I go down Main Street, I just almost die. D.M. Reed's was on the corner of Main and Fairfield. And they had a footman. He, when the cars came up, and he had a purple uniform, and he'd open the car doors and let the people out.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the people who worked, you know, owned the factories and all. And D.M. Reed's was a beautiful store. My mother, for her first job, my mother worked as in the D.M. They had a beautiful tea room. And my mother was head of that tea room. And not many people went, just the people who had a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I used to go there. And every November they'd have a fair, and my mother and some of the other black women who worked there would dress up in Japanese costumes and they'd serve tea.
Mm-hmm.
And when I would go in there, I'd just be so proud of my mother.
Were there any other black women that worked in the tea room?
Mm-hmm. Two or three others.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was a child, we went to the Y. I paid 3 cents to take up sewing. My mother was always having me take up typing or sewing or something, and I'd pay 3 cents, and you know, we'd walk across the bridge to the Y and take going and go back to back home.
Uh-huh.
Those have been the things we went. Everything that the entertainment was at the Y.
Mm-hmm.
They had dances at the Y. The young people went to the Y and for dances and parties. Mm-hmm. We had mother and daughter banquets, that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah.
And where the family was more intact.
Mm-hmm.
Children didn't go off on their own.
And there were agencies to keep that.
Yeah.
So great. After the war, were there any great changes in Bridgeport?
Yes, after the war, people left. I remember whole blocks of vacant houses.
Mm-hmm.
People left, and it changed a great deal.
Did you notice after the war that there were now more families, black families in Bridgeport that were in need?
No, still,
jobs
yeah,
were still.
Well, yes, after the war. But there were other industries like laundries,
mm-hmm.
and the people worked in those private places. And then, of course, people worked in homes,
mm-hmm.
in service. And that was another thing that kept people working.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people worked in Bridgeport. Yeah.
You mentioned that your father owned a small restaurant.
Well, he the restaurant belonged to a locomobile company, but he ran it. But it was his. He ran it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Were there any other black small businessmen in the area?
Yeah, there was a wonderful woman who was a caterer.
Mm-hmm.
She catered for all of the wealthy families as she and her husband started this business, and then banquets. And my father was the head of that.
Mm-hmm.
My father would always be the maitre d' of these banquets. And I remember when I was in high school, when I was teaching, we'd have a banquet, and my father was a very handsome man.
Hello, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
Very good.
And I was always very proud of him. He'd always come up and speak to us at the table.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a very wonderful business, but it ended very tragically. The woman, the lady who, I don't think I'd like to say what happened.
Fine.
And of course the doctors.
Mm-hmm. There were black doctors in the area.
We had several black doctors,
mm-hmm.
who came, and they did. The first black doctor was named Dr. Bradley, and he was a marvelous man. He lived up on Highland Avenue, and he went to black and white.
Mm-hmm.
He had quite a history of being a very kind man. And we had Dr. James and Dr. McCall. We had several black doctors and dentists, Dr. Gibbs. And they did very well.
Mm-hmm. Where did you live after you married?
Well, no, but before I left Brearsley Street,
mm-hmm.
I told you I lived
when
I was about 15 years old. I told you this man, these people who were deacons in the Baptist Church, mm-hmm. they built a brand new house, and we lived in that house.
Mm-hmm.
And my father wanted to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
But this man who owned it couldn't sell it to us because we weren't Baptists. So then my father decided that he wanted to own a house.
Mm-hmm.
And I told you he had lots of white friends.
Mm-hmm.
So he had this friend who had just built a house on 196 Fairview Avenue, not far from St. Vincent's Hospital.
Right.
So he said to my father, I'll sell you the house, Williams. And it was a lovely house. And my mother was very fair. So they went to look at the house. And we bought the house.
Mm-hmm.
But the very next day after he bought the house, his wife was furious because this man had built several houses. And he promised that she would live in that house. So he said, I'll have to buy it. You have to sell it back to me, Williams. And my father says, no, I'm not going to sell you this house back. And when the people found out that they thought my mother was white,
mm-hmm.
And there was a record, a phonograph place. Nan owned the phonograph place. And he had one of the mortgages on his house. And friends of, we had a friend who worked in that factory, that place. And he said that day that there was a whole line of people coming in and out protesting that of us living on this street. And my father.